in the military system, so they would see a judge only in a few days. But I think this is not a coincidence. It's a message to the Palestinians, to the people who stand with them in Umm El Khair, that despite the tragedy, the settlers and the state are continuing the effort to push the people out. And, you know, even burying him, a very simple thing, the Israeli army is preventing him to be buried in his hometown, in his village. They want him to be buried in a nearby town, despite the fact his family obviously wants to bury him in the place he lived all his life, and he was active there. His friends and colleague told me, and I also knew him personally, that he was the most peaceful man. Every time I came there, I would see him. He'd always host and greet people and make tours there. He was in contact with the media. He was updating me weekly on the harassment, on the campaign of the settlers and the army to force them to leave. And it's a tragedy that it's hard to imagine. You know, Umm El Khair will not be the same without him.
Oren Zeev, I want to thank you for being with us. We'll continue to follow this and follow the funeral when it takes place. Again, family members have been taken of Alda, but the man who is responsible for his death has been released under house arrest. Oren Zeev, reporter and photographer for 972 Magazine, will link to your new piece about Alda, headlined "The Most Peaceful Person." I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Plugged In on KBOO is a radio show dedicated to underground electronic music. The show is hosted by DJ Tronic and features deep house, tech house, techno, drum and bass, breakbeats, future bass, downtempo, and more. Plugged In frequently has local producers and DJs on the show, and we provide info about upcoming events in Portland, including free ticket giveaways. Plugged In airs the first and third Friday of every month from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific time.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland police face criticism for the tragic death of a local man.
A Russian earthquake spurs tsunami warnings from Japan to Alaska, Hawaii, and the West Coast.
And in national news, the Trump administration and the EPA claim greenhouse gases are no longer a threat to human health.
Good evening. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 30th, 2025. I'm Daniel Eisner.
And I'm Josh Salem. In a unanimous vote this week, the Salem City Council approved an emergency declaration to help prepare for a potential drinking water shortage next year. That declaration was tied to an upcoming deep drawdown of the Detroit Lake Reservoir, already set to take place next fall. The measure is being done to potentially improve downstream passages for endangered fish, including juvenile salmon. The reservoir supplies the North Santa Am River, which is the city's main source of drinking water. About 200,000 residents across Salem and its surrounding areas would be affected by this potential shortage. The declaration allows the city to activate its Emergency Operations Center, authorizing spending to reduce threats to life and property. The declaration also lets the city enter agreements with vendors and other agencies to develop alternative water supplies. Officials with the city's Public Works Department estimated the cost to prepare and upgrade the city's water system in response to the drawdown would be $8 million. This includes building new groundwater wells and an additional pump at the city's emergency water supply station. The drawdown will bring the reservoir's water to its lowest level since the Detroit Dam was built in the early 1950s. Critics are also concerned that flushing that much water from the reservoir will release large amounts of sediment that has been trapped behind the dam. In early 2025, Congress ordered the Army Corps of Engineers, which operates the dams, to study how to avoid causing problems downstream with drawdowns. Some alternatives for Salem include potentially tapping into its emergency supply from the city of Kaiser or using underground wells. The city also has an aquifer storage and recovery system in South Salem, which could provide up to 5 million gallons per day. The Army Corps has been working with the city to ensure the health and safety of the community and environment as it moves through its drawdown process. Andrea Almond, a spokesperson for the Portland District, said, quote, "Our shared goal is to implement solutions to protect endangered species while ensuring the continued provision of safe, clean drinking water for Salem residents. Through ongoing collaboration and community engagement, we aim to achieve a balanced approach that serves both environmental and public health interests," end quote. The agency is conducting a supplemental environmental impact statement to assess the potential impact on water quality in local communities. The drawdown is expected to begin in the fall of 2026 and will last for at least 30 days.
The July 1st murder of Douglas Ivers outside the downtown Multnomah County Library has raised controversy over responsibility for security at the library and other public spaces. On that day, accused killer Hassan Muse followed Ivers out of the library, and after an argument, Ivers pulled out a bear spray. Muse pulled out a handgun and shot. Ivers was transported to the area hospital where he later died from his injuries. The library building is administrated by the Multnomah County, and the sidewalk, the street outside, fall under the city's Portland purview. Portland Metro's Chamber Commissioner Megan Moyer has asked for more patrols around the city library for the next year. Additionally, nearby business complained about drug dealing and property damage outside the library. In May, the county passed the Metro Chamber with a draft of its Safe Summer Activation Plan aimed at making the central library and the block around it safe during warmer weather. In June, the chamber sent a list of demands including more collaboration between the county and the police, zero tolerance for drug use and weapons at the central library, and permanent guard at the library's entrance. In response to the events on July 1st, the library has turned off its Wi-Fi after hours and plans to remove several outdoor benches.
The Portland Police Association attempted to deflect some of the criticism it has received for the death of Damon Lamar Johnson in police custody in June onto city councilors. The police union accused councilors of pitting police and behavioral health responders against each other. Aaron Schmautz, president of the police union, said, quote, "The false choice narrative must end, and our city employees and public service servants must be allowed to work together to solve our community's deepest needs," end quote. The comments came during a hearing regarding Portland's years-long legal settlement to reform police tactics, particularly how police interact with people in experiencing a mental health crisis. The settlement itself dates back to 2012, when the U.S. Department of Justice reported Portland officers had a pattern of using excessive force against people with behavioral health issues. Yesterday's hearing frequently invoked Johnson's death. Johnson, 52, died when three Portland police officers tried to arrest him at his apartment. 911 callers had reported that Johnson had flooded his apartment and hung knives out of the window of that apartment. Three officers entered the apartment that night and attempted to restrain Johnson. Officers forced him onto his stomach, and he lost consciousness before paramedics arrived. He later died in an area hospital. An investigation into those events is still ongoing.
Johnson's death prompted a huge public outcry and caused into question whether police should respond to situations by themselves and when they should include mental health crisis workers. In this session, held by an independent city board, many attendees said Portland street response staff, who are unarmed and educated on behavioral health, should handle 911 calls, similar to the one involving Johnson. Schmautz echoed support for Portland street response, but criticized multiple city officials for contributing to a shifting narrative that blamed police. He said one city councilor posted an image of a fake invoice of a large police-related expenses of taxpayer dollars on social media. The invoice also included a fake ID number of 1312, allegedly a code for ACAB. Schmautz said that stands for All Cops Are Bad. According to OPB, the social media post belonged to Councilor Mitch Green. Green said that the fake invoice was an art installation from a recent exhibit on Juneteenth and was one of several artworks he posted. He said neither he nor his staff noticed the fake ID number. Schmautz also said Andre Miller, a top city staffer for Councilor Angelita Murillo, led chants during demonstrations saying police are too stupid to respond to mental health calls. Johnson's death coincides with the time of expansion for Portland Street Response. The city bolstered its funding in the last budget cycle, which will allow the agency to add more staff and expand their hours. Portland had not yet fully completed this with the settlement.
Calls for a national ban on assault weapons have been renewed after a shooting in New York. The Department of Defense has banned almost 600 books in its base's schools. And the British Prime Minister says the UK will recognize a Palestinian state. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This mass shooting occurred in one of the most heavily policed cities in America, inside a building with multiple layers of security. Yet, it could not stop a man wielding a weapon of war.
Paul Murray with the Newtown Action Alliance is one of many gun control advocates calling again for a federal ban on assault weapons after a gunman opened fire in a New York City skyscraper, killing four before shooting himself. Shane Tamora drove from Las Vegas, seemingly seeking revenge on the NFL for what he wrote was CTE, brain damage caused by repeated blows. Tamora never played professionally, but was a star high school football player. In a rambling note, he asked that his brain be studied. The shooter was known to have serious mental issues, but kept possession of his weapons. New York State has some of the strictest firearms laws in the country, but there was little to stop the legal gun owner from walking into a Manhattan office building openly carrying an assault rifle. State firearm restrictions were approved after mass shootings at elementary schools in 2024, but Governor Kathy Hochul says the entire country needs tighter and universal gun laws.
So you can't say you're tough on crime and be soft on guns or weak on guns. It's just not holding up. We need a national awakening here. People need to be talking about this once again, and it shouldn't just happen in the wake of a tragedy like this. It should be an ongoing conversation.
In a major rollback of environmental rules, the EPA is reversing its finding that planet-warming greenhouse gases are a threat to public health. That determination was key to limiting carbon emissions, and fossil fuel allies are calling this the most important deregulation in years. The lawyer for Ghislaine Maxwell says she will only testify in return for clemency or a pardon. The former girlfriend of the late pedophile Jeffrey Epstein is serving a long sentence for child sex trafficking. The Defense Department's Education Division is banning a record number of books. Close to 600 volumes have been banned at schools on bases, drawing resistance from the ACLU and some military families. Taslin Magnuson with Every Library notes parents can usually order books the local library doesn't have, but she says things are quite different on a DOD base.
Either a kid has parents who can afford to order books, that's not necessarily available for every kid, and they're not going to have a public library. So the school library is their library, and we're taking that away from them.
The federal budget megabill cut funding for the Institute for Library and Museum Sciences, a key funder of public libraries nationwide. Librarians have been criticized for not banning certain books, causing disruption and mistrust at large and small institutions alike. A former librarian of Congress fired earlier this year after a decade in the post says she wasn't given much of an explanation. She and others charged the move was politically motivated. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer says the UK will recognize Palestine at the UN this September. This comes as Israel continues to block aid to the country, leading to famine for more than 2 million people. Starmer says to forestall the recognition of a Palestinian state, Israel would have to allow in much more aid and meet the terms of a ceasefire.
Unless the Israeli government takes substantive steps to end the appalling situation in Gaza, agree to a ceasefire, and commit to a long-term sustainable peace, reviving the prospect of a two-state solution. And this includes allowing the UN to restart the supply of aid.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. At 6, it's Flashpoints. Then at 7, Hard Knock Rock Radio. Tonight's overnight forecast calls for the chance of showers finding its way into the North Portland metro area, expecting a low of 61. Tomorrow should be dry but cooler, with a daytime high of near 80 degrees. Today in history, U.S. President Lyndon B. Johnson signs the Social Security Act of 1965 into law, establishing Medicare and Medicaid. The legislation initially provided federal health care insurance for people over 65 and for financially challenged families. The quote of the day is also from President Lyndon B. Johnson. He said, quote, books and ideas are the most effective weapons against intolerance and ignorance, end quote.
Interior Secretary Deb Haaland has been deemed the 2025 recipient of the Chief Standing Bear Prize of Courage. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. It's been an up-and-down week for former Interior Secretary Deb Haaland. On the upside, Haaland has been deemed the 2025 recipient of the Chief Standing Bear Prize for Courage. The Nebraska Examiner reports that Haaland, the first Native person to serve as a cabinet secretary who addressed the missing and murdered Indigenous people crisis and the oppressive legacy of federal boarding schools, will receive the honor on October 13th in Lincoln, Nebraska. The nonprofit Chief Standing Bear Project recognizes those people who embody the spirit of the famed Ponca chief, whose legal fight with the U.S. government led to Native Americans being recognized as persons under the law. On the downside, Axios reports that Haaland did not get endorsed for her bid for New Mexico governor in the Democratic primary by the Sandia Pueblo. The tribe instead endorsed her challenger, Sam Bregman. While a small tribe, the Sandia Pueblo operates one of the state's largest casinos and is seen as influential in the commerce and entertainment sectors. Haaland is a member of the Pueblo of Laguna, who is Interior Secretary with the Biden administration. The documentary, Who She Is, humanizes the missing and murdered Indigenous persons crisis on the Wind River Reservation. As Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman reports, it just won a regional Emmy Award.
Who She Is uses animation to tell the story of four women, Sheila, Jocelyn, Leela, and Abby. It's not just about how they died. It's about how they lived, who they were, and what they loved. The film took home the Heartland Emmy Award for Best Cultural Documentary. Here's Northern Arapaho co-producer Jordan Dresser.
To win this award is such a big honor, and also it gets their stories and their awareness across bigger platforms.
And co-producer Sophie Barksdale.
Thank you to the families. We worked so closely with them, and we wouldn't have done it in any other way.
Who She Is came out in 2022 with showings at national and international film festivals. There's a screening planned for September at Central Wyoming College. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Haberman.
One of the biggest all-Indigenous high school basketball competitions in North America wrapped up this past Saturday in Phoenix. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, two rivalries heated up on center court in the tourney finals at PHX Arena.
Good afternoon and welcome to the 22nd Annual Native American Basketball Invitational, presented by Resolution Copper.
NABI began with 24 teams, but now it's grown to a record 204 with 3,100 athletes representing more than 160 federally recognized tribes from Phoenix to Anchorage, Alaska. 508 games in all, ending with Arizona's Rez Bombers having both boys and girls teams in the finals. The boys squad dropped the Phoenix's Young Guns, while the defending girls champs took on Oklahoma's legendary Elite in a rematch from last year. Winning their third title in 4 years. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And on this day last year, the Department of the Interior released the second and final volume of its investigative report on federal boarding schools. Building on an initiative launched by Secretary Deb Haaland and led by Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs Brian Newland, the report expanded the number of deaths of Native students, as well as the number of burial sites and the participation of religious institutions and organizations. The report concluded a three-year probe that saw the federal government accepting responsibility for its role in creating the system. Nearly 1,000 children died while attending these schools. I'm Brian Bull for National Native News.
Yesterday, Lee Zeldin, head of the Environmental Protection Agency, said that the Trump administration will revoke the 2009 endangerment finding, which said that greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and methane endanger human lives. This finding is the basis of the Clean Air Act and other restrictions on emissions. Eliminating the finding would mean that the government, including future administrations, would have no legal authority to restrict vehicle and other emissions. Speaking at an Indianapolis truck dealership, Zeldin said, quote, the proposal would, if finalized, amount to the largest deregulatory action in the history of the United States. The transportation sector accounts for 28% of greenhouse gas emissions, more than any other sector, including manufacturing and agriculture in the United States. Former United States President, Vice President Al Gore said, quote, "Today's EPA announcement ignores the blindingly obvious reality of the climate crisis and sidelines the EPA's own scientists and lawyers, in fact, in favor of the interests and profits of the fossil fuel industry," end quote. In recent times, the Trump administration has also moved to scrap regulations on pollution from power plants, halt key measurements of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and delay approvals of wind and solar energy projects on federal lands.
In a surprising turn of events, Ghislaine Maxwell has issued a letter outlining her conditions for testifying before Congress, raising concerns about transparency and accountability in the ongoing Epstein scandal. Maxwell, currently serving a 20-year prison sentence for trafficking a minor to Jeffrey Epstein, has called the apparent arrangements for her testimony non-starters, citing the lack of immunity and the plan for her to speak from prison. Despite her serious criminal background, politicians and the public are now looking to Maxwell as a potential source of crucial information regarding Epstein's co-conspirators. This shift comes in the wake of widespread outrage over the Justice Department's earlier decision not to release files related to Epstein, prompting calls for greater accountability. Maxwell's letter specifically requested any testimony be scheduled after the Supreme Court addresses her pending appeal, as well as another court appeal she plans to pursue. She's demanding that the House committee provide its questions in advance, allowing her to prepare and identify corroborating documents. This raises red flags about the integrity of the process and whether it can genuinely serve the public interest. In a controversial twist, Maxwell has also indicated her willingness to testify if Donald Trump grants her clemency. Trump, who has the power to pardon or commute her sentence, could thus influence this high-stakes situation. This raises troubling questions for some. Why is a convicted sex trafficker being offered a platform for cooperation? And what does this say about the administration's commitment to justice? Maxwell's past involvement with powerful figures, including Trump himself, adds another layer of complexity. Her appeal is set to be considered by the Supreme Court in September, but the fact that she is leveraging her testimony in exchange for potential clemency reveals a deeply troubling dynamic. As the nation grapples with the fallout from the scandal, the public is demanding transparency and accountability from both the government and high-profile individuals like Trump. The implications of Maxwell's potential testimony could reshape our understanding of the web of complicity surrounding Epstein's crimes.
In an unprecedented display of self-interest, former President Donald Trump has once again blurred the lines between public service and personal profit. On Tuesday, July 29th, he participated in a marketing event at his Scotland golf resort, treating it as an official act worthy of promotion by taxpayer-funded staff. This ribbon-cutting ceremony was featured on the White House's daily schedule, and his speech was broadcast live on the White House YouTube channel. As Trump played a round of golf, his staff shared real-time videos on social media, effectively using government resources to promote his own businesses. When questioned about this blatant misuse of taxpayer funds, Trump dismissed the concerns aboard Air Force One, focusing instead on his golf performance. Quote, "Did you see that drive on the first hole? Pretty long," he quipped, sidestepping the serious ethical implications of his actions. Norm Eisen, former top ethics lawyer on the Obama White House, didn't hold back, stating, quote, "It's the very definition of corruption. Using his official position and government resources to benefit himself," end quote. This raises alarming questions about the integrity of our leadership, in stark contrast to the previous instances where Trump at least attempted to maintain an arm's length distance from events benefiting his financial interests. This latest event showcased an egregious lack of restraint. His April speech at the Saudi-backed LIV golf dinner and May private dinner for crypto investors were both downplayed in official communications, but this time, the promotion was front and center. Trump's five-day trip to Scotland is projected to cost taxpayers at least $9.7 million, pushing his total golf-related travel expenses to a staggering $52 million in just 6 months. During his first term, his golf outing cost American taxpayers $152 million, with many of those funds funneled directly into his businesses. Despite facing multiple felony charges, including falsifying business records and mishandling classified documents, Trump continues to operate with impunity, leveraging the presidency for personal gain. He previously escaped legal repercussions for an attempted coup on other serious allegations, raising pressing concerns about accountability. This blatant exploitation of government resources not only undermines the integrity of the presidency, but is a gross disregard for the many people who are losing health care and SNAP benefits thanks to President Trump.
Around 11:25 local time Wednesday, a powerful 8.8 magnitude earthquake struck off Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula, sending tsunami waves towards Japan, Hawaii, and the U.S. West Coast. This earthquake is the largest ever in the country's history. It set off a chain reaction of events that could potentially leave multiple countries affected by this devastating event. Over 2 million people across the Pacific were ordered to evacuate, but many tsunami warnings have since been downgraded. And, while several injuries have been reported, there were no immediate fatalities. In Russia, 13-foot waves flooded Severokurilsk, damaging facilities and sweeping away boats. Fortunately, tsunami warnings for Sakhalin and Kamchatka have been lifted. Japan advised nearly 1.9 million residents to evacuate, but its warnings have now been downgraded to advisories. Hawaii initially faced threats of 10-foot waves, but those warnings have also eased. Experts warn that the situation is still developing. Chris Goldfinger, a marine geology professor, noted that areas southeast of Kamchatka may be the most affected. This earthquake, recorded at a depth of 20.7 kilometers, is tied for the sixth most severe quake in history. The area's low population density may have helped mitigate potential casualties.
The Klyuchevsky volcano on Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula has begun erupting just hours after powerful 8.8 magnitude earthquakes struck off the county's far eastern coast. Lava is now flowing from the largest active volcano in the northern hemisphere, with the Russian Academy of Science reporting a descent of burning hot lava on the western slope, accompanied by explosions and a glow above the summit. The eruption follows a massive earthquake that triggered a tsunami, prompting evacuations and emergency declarations across the Pacific. This earthquake is tied to the sixth strongest ever recorded, having been upgraded from an initial 8.0 magnitude. Klyuchevsky stands at 4,750 meters, or 15,584 feet, and is located about 280 miles north of the Petropavlovsk-Kamchatsky. The volcano last erupted in 2023, and scientists have been monitoring it closely, noting that its crater had been filling with lava, and ash plumes have been emitted in recent weeks. As of Wednesday, the volcano sent ash plumes soaring up to 1.9 miles above sea level, with reports indicating that ash is moving eastward at 10 knots, threatening to spread hundreds of kilometers in the coming hours. Kamchatka, often dubbed the land of fire and ice, is one of the most seismically active volcano regions in the world, home to about 300 volcanoes, 29 of which are currently active. The Tokyo Volcanic Ash Advisory Center has issued an advisory regarding the Klyuchevsky eruption, emphasizing the potential impact of ash on air travel and surrounding areas.
KBOO news poet Dan Raphael isn't afraid of being afraid.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." These days, there's plenty of fear all over the place. Fear of Trump, fear of ICE, fear of being the wrong color, of not being white enough, fear of being liberal, being kind, fear of neighbors, of fascism, fear of alleged democracy, fear of losing jobs, housing, health, friends, fear of losing a livable planet, of losing ourselves to fear. While there's plenty of fear distributed freely and relentlessly, the resources and help we need to prosper are being hoarded, transformed from money for food, shelter, and growth into mansions, private jets, and million-dollar art. I fear America will get a lot worse before it gets better. An online community is not the same as face-to-face. The internet has recently become so untrustworthy and manipulative. Fear is the mind killer, the hope and love killer, the dark cloud in the sky that can be dissipated with the sun of our hearts, our efforts for a less fearful tomorrow. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us or text with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is John Salem, James Kemp, Daniel Eisner, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. A special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira and Brian Bull. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, and on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Daniel Eisner.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. I have here with me Grace Von Golly to talk about her new article, Evolving Images, Guided by an Internal Compass. Standards for photojournalists covering homelessness are evolving. Guidance comes from experience, mentorship, and a personal code of ethics. Hi, Grace. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, let's talk about this article. It's great. It's kind of about ethics in photography, specifically around homelessness. You talk to a lot of different